Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Currency and its implications for the future. Today, from the basics to the most advanced topics, we'll provide you with the latest news and insights to help you stay ahead of the curve. And if you'll join us each week, we'll dig deeper into the world of blockchain and cryptocurrency. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, and that intro was entirely created by ChatGPT-4 in about one-third of a second. Johnny Gwynn, welcome into the studio. Thanks for being on the show. What do you think about
ChatGPT has been a tool on the web that I've been using nonstop for 14 days now, and I'm addicted to it like I was addicted to Twitter first time ever, or even MySpace. Like I couldn't get off of it first time I did it. But this, it helps me make money, makes me better at my job, and it saves me hours a day on research.
It's really remarkable. If you're just checking in, welcome into the show.
Welcome. Hello. And I'm so happy
Scott
to be
Tindall.
Here.
I got Johnny Gwynn with me here and Phillip's with us. And tonight we're going to talk about some of the headlines. Obviously, we've got the banking meltdown going on. Mm-hmm. We've got some news in crypto. You know, one of the things that's most interesting, Johnny, when we get into this is these couple of banks that are going down were crypto lenders. And
right.
It is really going to put a cramp in the on-ramp and off-ramp of future and current crypto projects.
And I've seen where people have been, in my opinion, unfairly blaming crypto for why these banks are failing. And that is not exactly the truth, because most of it is these banks like SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, were so heavily in the tech sector, in the stock market, that and since the pandemic, it's just been killed. Big tech has been killed in the stock market. That's hurt it so much worse than this small sector of cryptocurrency. There's a lot of mismanagement, a lot of weird things going on, and we're going to see fallout from it. And I am not a banking expert. I barely know how to balance my checking account. I used to be a banking manager, by the way, Scott.
Well, you had the tools you
I
needed to get
horrible.
It done.
Horrible. I had no business being there. They liked me being there. It was a small bank in Mobile. They were wonderful, but I had no business in banking. It's so complicated what's going on with the banking world, and it's scary. It's scary for the investor and for the deposit holders out there.
Yeah, I think that's anyone who is rooting for any of these banks to fail very short-sighted.
Look, we have a very close friend that hates Wells Fargo. I mean, just it has been really kind of messed over by them. But to be honest, you don't want Wells Fargo failing, because the ripple effects of a bank like that would be across pensions and 401ks, and it would be one of these things of like you would see some crashing.
And there's very good chance that tomorrow when we wake up, the Europeans are going through that with Credit Suisse.
Correct.
I mean, they're on the brink tonight.
And Saudis are pulling out of stuff. And, you know, I just saw the headline today. It was like banking crisis reminiscent of the 1980s. And a lot of us don't remember because I was only like 10. But the idea of the 80s was a very tumultuous problem for banks without near the volume of money we're talking about now.
Yeah, there's an astounding amount of money. And part of where we may end up going with this, and it's stuff we've talked about before, is you're getting more and more justification for a central bank digital currency.
Ugh.
To try and we'll allege we'll solve these problems.
Which one of the news stories that I'm going to bring up today is there is actually an official state digital currency, and I will reveal what country.
Ooh.
Was announced this week.
That's interesting.
A cliffhanger for you listeners out there.
Yeah, it's right. We'll keep them hanging on until after the break, and
that's
maybe
right.
Then they can learn what country it is. You know, I don't know what country it is either.
Well, good. I'll surprise you. I sent you the show notes that ChatGPT created
I read all of those quickly.
It's the number one news story. We're coming back from that. This is terrible radio right here. But yes, the digital state-owned currency is not good for anybody. And when I name this country, you really go, not good for if you're a citizen of this country, because they're very oppressive and tend to do things with a very strong hand.
Yeah, the idea that the entire currency of your country can be tracked and monitored and controlled.
Well, how about your
everybody?
Own personal account, and they don't like what you're doing, so they just delete your money right out of your digital wallet.
Or they're just incompetent, and they delete your digital money out of your wallet.
Right.
They don't even have to be like malicious about it. Just incompetence alone.
And I guarantee with state-owned government money, a digital money, you're not going to be able to put it in a private ledger, a private vault.
Oh, absolutely not. No way
you'd be able to do it. Yeah. But I can see banks making a lot of storage money with storing your digital money, though.
They're going to find a way to make
capitalism for you right
They're going to find a way to make money. Oh, yeah.
Your safety deposit box for your digital money.
And your NFTs.
Yeah, there you go.
Might as well keep me in the same place.
I love it.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Johnny Gwynn's going to let us know which of these oppressive nations is going to lay down some CBDC on their citizens.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, live tonight on 106.5 FM Talk, like we are most Wednesday nights when it's not Auburn basketball season. And we're excited to be here tonight and talk to you about the world of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, innovation, emerging technologies, and then whatever Johnny and I feel like talking about today. And Johnny, before we move into talking about CBDCs again, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you if you saw the headline today that the Pentagon is making official statements about alien motherships and their potential to deploy smaller ships to Earth.
Yeah, so now they're not, that's not existence, it's details into their attack plans.
Right. We've kind of moved past, hey, you guys, they might be real, to... Oh, it could be a mothership.
They didn't even talk about it. And now it's deploying. I always keep wondering, what are they shielding us from? Like, because they're releasing that information, what information are they trying to divert our attention from?
I mean, wouldn't we pay attention if they were like, the Pentagon was like, the Chinese could be deploying airships and drones onto the country?
Right.
We'd be on higher alert.
Yeah.
Here they're telling us that, you know, intergalactic beings.
Well, again, the last 4 years, let's just say 6 years of constant news cycle, the 24-second news cycles that we have, they've been talking more and more about the existence of aliens with footage, right? Mm-hmm. And which would have made the news, it would have been like the biggest shocking news of all times 10, 15 years ago. Now it's not even front page. It's not even information that even gets dealt with because of the issues we're dealing with, the real issues of like inflation and political strife and everything else. And
global famine.
And it's amazing that this information is being dripped out and it's not front page information, because this is that stuff that makes you question your existence in the galaxy. Yeah, like, why do we exist? And there's more out there and you're admitting to it, and yet we're not even talking about
it's
it.
Not an That's anonymous crazy. AP report. It's no, the it's Pentagon not,
it's
would
not
like
the
you
sun.
To know.
It's not the sun that you used to look at when you're at the grocery store and it was next to Bat Baby.
Right.
You know,
the
U.S. government negotiates with aliens and then my son is a bat baby.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is right. It's AP Wire and Reuters, and you're sitting there going, wow. And again, what they'll say is, well, a UFO doesn't mean it's a alien. It just means, you know, and then you're like, dude, you're showing something that defies gravity, defies physics,
right,
in this video that you're showing. What do you mean it's not of this earth? They did admit 2 years ago that they had off-world artifacts. That was admitted by the Pentagon. We have off-world artifacts, and that just didn't get noticed. And of course,
not like a moon rock or space dust.
No, this is. I'm thinking a tool,
maybe so,
some type, or maybe a ray gun. Look, I've watched Star Trek. I know those things they have.
I mean, I think that octopus are off-world artifacts.
There's enough weird stuff at the bottom of the sea that I've seen that really looks like it's from, you know, that the deep dark parts of the ocean. You know. We have explored space. This blows my mind. We have explored space further and with much more distance than we have going deep into our own oceans.
Pressure, man. Pressure issue.
We cannot figure out the pressure issue, yes.
Yeah.
I bet you the aliens have.
Certainly. They've got to, they may be living down there
and
launching from the seabed.
Have you seen those videos from those aerial footage of something moving on the bottom of the ocean and how it's like the size of a battleship, but it's below the surface? Look it up on, you can look it up on the internet. It's underwater, like vehicles or something like this, secret underwater vehicles.
Ask ChatGPT to give us the latest from the Pentagon's update on aliens and unidentified flying
objects. You talk about something else blockchain oriented right now. I'll look at this.
All right. Johnny's going to go figure out for us what ChatGPT-4, the latest iteration, says about these aliens and what's going on. But you want me to talk about the blockchain and crypto, but I mean, how do we negotiate with the aliens?
Well, suppose we
maybe
have
that's
since
where
the
crypto comes from, right? Do we digital transfer them some?
Well, they say math is the universal language, so it's going to be some kind of mathematical thing. And as the story goes, Majestic 12 was set up by the Eisenhower administration, and they already negotiated with them, son of a guns, way back in the 50s. So just letting you know. Look up Majestic 12 if you ever want to read up some really great. But I'm telling you, I think it's like all coming out true because of what they're telling us now.
I mean, they don't have any incentive to tell us.
It was X-File episode materials, and now it's literally AP Newswire stuff.
Page 7. Yeah, yes. Today in the news, page 7. It is really interesting. The world is changing very fast. I think that, you know, since the start of the pandemic, it seems like everything has been in hyper speed. Like, things are happening. A year feels like a decade, you know, and a decade's worth of... I saw somebody tweet or post the other day. It's like, I'm tired of living through my 15th once in a generation event. You know, like, can we not get one of those again?
Yeah, I totally understand. And that's the thing of I really quit watching the news 8 months ago because I was instructed by my doctor because of blood pressure issues. So.
That's a good idea.
I read headlines of like the Drudge Report or other, like just the headlines to understand something. I'll dive in some things if I need to, but I stay away from a lot of news, which is, I'm on a news channel. You shouldn't do that. You should listen to 106, FM Talk 106 all the time. But, you know, you have to be careful with your diet of what you put in. Now, I will jump real quick and tell you what the latest news from the United States Pentagon on identified flying objects.
All right, let's hear it.
The Pentagon has recently released a report on unidentified flying objects, UFOs. The report states the phenomenon observed by military personnel is characterized by advanced acceleration, hypersonic velocities, low observability, and positive lift, and is highly advanced aerospace platform technology. The report also says that the Department of Defense takes these reports very seriously and that is committed to gaining a better understanding of the phenomenon for the safety and security of the nation.
Basically, they just admitted, we don't know where they are, but we're interested in learning more about it.
And I will say, ChatGPT, I'm learning. Again, ChatGPT, we've been talking about this a lot. It is artificial. It's artificial intelligence is the easiest thing to say on the internet.
Right.
But really, it's a library of all things on the internet, and it's prompted by an instruction you give it. My problem is I'm not prompting the machine very well. So when I give it a general question like, what is the latest information from the United States Pentagon on UFOs, I need to learn to be very specific on asking that question of the week, March 6th to the 12th.
That's
going to
be, I feel like this can be an entirely new career, right? You're going to be like a research archivist or...
Right.
Like the researcher of old, right? Remember how you used to go to the library and dig through the Dewey
Librarians.
System? And,
yeah, like that.
Like, librarians could really become super helpful, or just like there's a role in everybody's company that you're the machine learning ChatGPT expert.
Right.
That when we have a query, we send it to you. You know how to make sure that it's questioned properly or formatted or you know, the follow-ups to produce the outcome that you need.
So I'll give you the which have all been generated from my research from the OpenAI.com ChatGPT. Okay, the 10 best uses for ChatGPT-4. 1, create generate creative content for storylines for books, movies, and video games. There's an article about Amazon. There's a thing called Amazon Self-Publishing. It's a great service. You can upload your PDF of your book, and if no one buys it, it doesn't print it. But if someone buys it, it prints it on demand and sends it.
Wow.
All right. Because of ChatGPT, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of new books now. Because people are prompting ChatGPT to write children's books, to write spy novels, all that stuff. So that's number one. Two, develop personal chatbot conversations for customer service, which is great. When you do that chat thing, you're not talking to anybody. It's usually a company called Zendesk, by the way, Zendesk.com. But if this can get smarter, this is a smarter machine that helps you solve your problem online. I don't care if it's an AI machine or a human, as long as it helps me solve my problem on my website, right?
I mean, from a deliverable standpoint,
yeah.
The chatbot will be more consistent than a customer.
And it also learns from, and supposedly it learns from its own mistakes. So it learns from mistakes. So hopefully that's amazing. Automate mundane tasks in customer service and sales. So again, this is going to be something that won't take all jobs away, but it will take some jobs away. So one person now can manage what five people could do because of this new technology. Generate automatic emails. I do that all the time. A friend of mine's going through a very tough time right now. I didn't know what to write in that email. I'm not kidding. I'm looking at a blank screen. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to get started because it's very sensitive. It's very sad. I actually had ChatGPT write the email for me. Mm. I prompted to say, please write me a personal and friendly email for a friend who is going through a very difficult emotional time.
Right.
And it wrote this very generic thing, but it gave me the prompt to get started.
Right.
So what it did was it saved me time, and now there's no such thing as writer's block anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what you're trying to achieve, you don't have to be creative. You just have to know what to ask for. Personalized recommendations for customers on your website, automated product reviews. So it takes all the product reviews that are out there, summarizes them, and rewrites them. That's fantastic. I'm using it a lot right now for my podcast company. I put in the transcription of the podcast. It does my podcast description summary paragraph for me.
Right.
It picks out 10 quotes and does 5 tweets for me.
Oh, nice.
And that would take me an hour. It takes me 5 minutes now.
That's
so
incredible.
It's a huge thing. And then what it also does is it creates natural sounding dialogue from when you're talking on the internet to one of these bots, these chat bots. So look, that's just right now off the top. We've also seen, Scott, you sent me a thing where someone was had written what they want as a website, and ChatGPT-4 was prompted to make a website from written text.
That's incredible.
By descriptions. That's the kind of, look, we're just touching the, it's a lot talking about what we're doing on a radio show, but look up ChatGPT, read about it on the internet, get you an account on openai.com. Right now, I think it's a waiting list, and play around. It's a great tool to play around with, even if it's just write me some emails or write me a children's story about a dog who's scared of everything.
I think one of the interesting things about this is what we're dealing with now is a very generic version of how this intelligence and machine learning will operate. Soon there will be very niche specific versions of these chat bots that will respond to you, whether it's in the legal field or tax or medical, or because they'll be able to machine learn down those verticals so fast.
Well, a friend of mine asked me, he does a podcast called Rocket Motivation with Rod Kate. It's 66 episodes into it. It's a show about overcoming adversity and tragedy and learning and life lessons from it. And he interviews all these people that have these ridiculously, crazily amazing stories of overcoming adversity. He's writing a book. And so, what he's done with ChatGPT is, again, he's used the transcripts to help him write his book. He has used it for that kind of stuff. And then recently he said, hey, I need something that's a release. Hey, do you have a release for me for my guests that I get permission from them to for this book? And I wrote in, write a book release template contract, blah, blah, blah. I wrote that, and it literally wrote what I would say is a probably boilerplate actor release, model release, or a voice release, and I sent it right to him. Now, it works with attorneys. He's going to get them to look over it, but now he can at least go to the attorney with something in hand.
That's right.
Not just say, I need blank, and they charge him whatever. He goes, no, would this work, or what could you tweak on this? But again, I don't know anything about writing a contract. I went to ChatGPT and put the right prompt in, and it wrote that to help me out.
Yeah, I think that you made a great point there in that don't rely on ChatGPT for your legal advice.
Right.
But it gives you a great start. And then if you want to have somebody look over it, you know, that may be a good option.
Which is a good lesson because we teased an oppressive state that was going to have a digital currency that launched.
We did. And I've been waiting on you.
And so I did the ChatGPT thing, and then I just rechecked it to fact-checked it.
Yep.
It didn't just came out. It came out in 2020, and it was China. But ChatGPT is not infallible. That's a good point. So the idea is I went and looked at this government-backed digital currency, and the idea is you still have to go and make sure the information is correct because this thing is not thinking. It is really regurgitating patterns. That's what it does.
Speaking of, when we come back, there's another ChatGPT story I want to talk to you about. I saw it earlier today. There's a guy who created a bot through ChatGPT for his Tinder profile.
Oh, very nice.
And he's been matching like crazy. And he said it's just eliminated a ton of time of him having to weed through
Sweet.
Some of these women. So we'll talk about how to use ChatGPT to improve your dating life when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Beyond the Blockchain on 106.5 FM Talk. I'm your host, Scott Tindall. The Johnny Gwynn. Johnny, before we get back into that story, can I talk to you about something you mentioned to me before we started the show?
Scott, your name is on the title of the show. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about as long as the FCC will not fine anybody.
All right, that's a fair point. We'll save part of the conversation for later. My question now is, we've been talking about ChatGPT and its, you know, applications and uses and, you know, the emerging technologies. But when you told me today that you learned about the patron saint of facial hair, I thought to myself, The good listeners of this show need to hear this story.
Okay, let me get the name right. Facial hair. Okay, so here it is. The story is this: there is a princess of Portugal. This is like the 16th century, and she was a virgin, and she was the king, you know, back in the day, they would have arranged marriages with a prince from, I don't know, Spain.
Yeah, you had to unite the tribes.
Well, the princess did not want to get married, and she wanted to actually stay chaste and actually be a nun. So the night before the marriage, the arranged marriage, she praised the god that, please let anything happen where I don't have to marry this man. And the next morning when she wakes up, she's got a full beard.
No kidding.
Full beard and doesn't get married and stays in her rest of her life. She is stays a nun the whole time.
So all these fellas with these thin, patchy beards, this is who they need to be praying to.
And again,
and overnight, you too may have a full growth.
Yes. So just letting you know.
But you know, we would have never known about this patron saint, but without ChatGPT.
Right, very much so. And the one that I'm pulling up right now is not the one that I researched. That's one, you know, but I'm telling you, it's a fascinating thing. Well, I don't have my notes with me. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm sorry, but that is the story. I also researched a saint called Saint Columba.
Yeah.
And he's Scottish, and then this is the 14th century. He fought Nessie.
The
Loch Ness Monster.
The Loch Ness
Monster. He rose his staff and said, you know, and the sea monster went back into its dark caves of the loch.
Well, maybe
Saint
that's going to
be. Columba. Why does that guy not have a celebration as big as St. Patrick's Day?
That's a great question.
He fought a sea monster, for goodness sakes.
That's way bigger than snakes.
Yes, very much so.
I mean, it's like a giant snake, right? St. Patrick had like a handful of little ones.
Well, it's like a giant snake and like a dinosaur together.
Yeah. He's like the Jurassic Park, the saint of Jurassic dinosaur, aquatic dinosaurs.
That's right. That would be cryptozoology, by the way, which is...
Oh, I do know what cryptozoology is.
That's what we're talking about here. Cryptozoology, yeah. That would be Bigfoot and the Yeti and the Loch Ness Monster. But I will tell you, this show has been very beyond the blockchain today.
Today it has been. It's been well beyond the blockchain today. There's not enough blockchain information that we want to talk about today anyway. Well, so I like this better.
But one
you said we can talk about whatever I want to talk about.
We can, but one thing that's interesting is I've been looking at other chat GPTs that are out there, other than the one that I'm using. What is fascinating is I noticed there's a tokenization too. Right now they're giving me, I think, $18 worth of whatever. So they take a small percentage of this. It's like pennies. It's like fractions of a penny when I do one of these functions. But I have been looking at AI cryptocurrency on the Coinbase and stuff that I do see where this is a real business model for why cryptocurrency really makes sense. Because when someone says, well, that cryptocurrency, doesn't do anything. And I will agree, Dogecoin is not, it's a Twitter meme coin. But this AI stuff, if corporations, marketing departments at Coca-Cola realize what tool this thing is right here, this chat GPT, mm-hmm. and they start using it, you think they're going to have any problems dumping $100,000 to buy tokens when they ask you for tokens for this? Hence, you're going to have a currency that actually works like that works for a function. That is something to worth possibly looking into to invest in, because it's going to have real function and real value.
That's a great point. And it takes real money to produce these chatbots. Like, it is, yes. It is not cheap for these venture companies to be creating these machine learning bots. They're going to have to find ways to monetize.
So OpenAI.com was bought a month ago by Microsoft for $10 billion.
Bargain.
And they are, the way I understand it, they are integrating it into Bing, their search engine. And what's going to happen is it's going to change the way we search. And the idea is, instead of putting in a subject matter for search, it's going to be more of a question, right? Mm-hmm. And so instead of websites coming up, it gives you an answer. It does a function. But Bing is going to be possibly the first one that's going to integrate this into the way we search the net and the way that SEO works in the web world.
Is SEO going to be as relevant?
Very much so, because the idea is they hope they're pulling from your website, because it's not so much choosing websites as in pulling from websites. That's what's going to be interesting, because you know the model of a website search engine is advertising. How in the world are they going to make sure they can make that where the advertisers are happy with how they're putting out that that information and how they're giving the relevancy of that?
I mean, is there a time coming when I ask my chatbot to give me a recipe for macaroni and cheese and it says, go buy Kraft macaroni noodles?
Corporate America will
click here to buy the macaroni recipe packet for this.
If you do it on your phone, it's already doing that, you know. But yes, be leery of all of that, because the advertising side is going to figure out, they're smart people in that world. I mean, you might not like them, but they're smart. You know, they're running the marketing side of stuff. There's going to be that. So that's why you have to be very careful with the idea of, just because you read it doesn't mean it's always right. It just means it's the most relevant thing, or it's something, put it in front of you.
We've talked about it before, but I think one thing that people really need to think through is, who's training the machine learning? Who's inputting the inputs? Because it can only pull from what it gets.
And if you're looking at conservative news sites, they are very worried because of the bias against the Republican Party with ChatGPT. There is a pattern to it, and if that's very much, it's the same thing of who is writing the code and what code are they putting in there, because we don't see under the hood, and none of us would know what to look at if we looked under the hood. Same way, I have a car out there, and that car technology is very old compared to the internet. Mm-hmm. I still can't open that hood and tell you what all that stuff does. It'd be the same way if I'm looking at the code. I'm not looking. I don't know what that code means.
Right.
I use the tool. I don't know how the tool's made.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting between that. And I think you're going to have to see some kind of intervention and oversight. And I don't know what that means. And I don't say that lightly. But between stuff like that and the deepfake technology.
Yeah.
The deepfake technology is going to be a major problem for people like the FCC, to determine what is real and what is not speech. And, you know, like from a commercial standpoint on patents and trademarks and copyrights and everywhere else, if we can just artificially make someone say something.
Right.
Determining what is real and what is not is going to be quite a challenge.
Well, we've already seen, let's just take the 2016 election, of all of these weird Facebook groups that were put up this, you know, fake or an event in the small city that was anti-Hillary or something, and everyone bought into it all for hook, line, and sinker. And that was just posting text. Imagine when people see a piece of video that looks as real as can be, mm-hmm. they're not going to know the pixelization problem. They're not going to know what's real or not real. And that's the whole thing of, like, do not believe what you see on the internet. It's going to, I hate to get to a point to say, don't believe anything you see on the internet anymore.
But where else are you going to get information now?
Well, of course. I mean, again, let me talk about Neuralink. I mean, you're talking about people jacking that right into their brain. I mean, yeah. That sounds cool to me, but there's no way I would do it. First of all, I wouldn't be the first 10 millionth person. I'd want to see 2 years of other guinea pigs, see, you know, what's going to happen putting a neural link into your brain from the internet. But we are way off the blockchain now.
No, we are on the blockchain.
Elon Musk has a new cryptocurrency coming out, Neuro, that is based on Neuralink.
Being able to buy into and fund through Neuralink.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But I guess now they have SpaceX too. SpaceX has got one as well. So, you know, it is what it is, man. We live in crazy times.
The world is changing at rapid pace. And I don't think people are, I think it's changing so fast that people are missing iterations of change. And they look up and like, wow, the world is really different now.
When we have had conversations with people, let's just say Helium, the Helium network, which you've talked about a lot on this on this show, people were thinking that it was something that we were talking about that's coming in the future. And then we reveal to them, no, it's already being built now.
Right.
And they were like, you got to be kidding me. And then we would show them something. And it was like they literally thought it was like the white paper.
That's right.
They thought it was the idea. And we're showing them it's been around since 2015. They're building. And these are people who I would say are not in a hermit. They're not Luddites. They're not people who are not watching and reading things. They are doing that, but yet we're in a niche of this innovation where I know we're just scratching the edges of it because it eludes me all the time and blows me away too.
Yeah, it's something that will be a day-to-day process, I think, trying to stay up to it. But more to talk on Beyond the Blockchain when we come back from the break. And I kind of want to get back into some of these interesting saints. We'll see how it goes when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain.
I'll pull my research.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host Scott Tindall, and joining me tonight are Philip on the board as always, and my friend the Johnny Gwynn, my favorite cryptozoologist.
If I could only get paid for going to go squatching or Loch Nessin, that would be so great.
There's a guy that I've seen on the internet, Instagram probably, that he basically is that. It's like he's a professional cryptozoologist, and he just goes on radio shows and talks about the weird things that he sees as he travels the world and searches.
Again, if you're entertaining and interested, and you probably have some PhD from some college, somebody gave you something, you write books. And then if you're entertaining and, you know, under the idea of science, you can make a good living. I mean, there's a lot of ufologists out there that have been making money for quite a long time. I mean, I love talk radio. I've always been a fan of talk radio, and I will tell you what got me into talk radio.
Tell me the story.
Art Bell, man. Late night Art Bell, man. I mean, like, this is like pre-X-Files. This was late night. Nobody wanted to be on late night radio, especially AM. And he would just be this guy that would have these, he'd let anybody come on. If you had any type of credential, it could be some, you know, you have a PhD degree in ufology you got it from the back of a matchbook. He's going to bring you on if you're entertaining.
Right.
But he'd also talk about JFK assassination stuff. Art Bell was just and George Norrie, who's taken over for him, God bless him. He's good at what he does. He's not even a sliver of what Art Bell was. But that guy was so entertaining, and it was like from 10 o'clock at night till 5 in the morning, man.
What a show.
7 hours. Well, that's probably like 5 hours, and the last 2 hours repeated.
Yeah, but still.
But when I was in school, in design school, we had these late, of course, you wait for the last night to, you know, the last night of the project. And so for like 2 weeks, supposed to be working on something, we do it all in the last minute. So I'm up for 2 straight days. And at nighttime, Art Bell kept me up because it was so damn entertaining. It was fantastic. It was so great.
Well, maybe hopefully we can have a show one day that lives up to the legend of Art Bell.
Look, man, there's cryptocurrency that has like Squatch and the Yeti one. There's all these weird, you come up. Squid was one of our TV show and Squid Coin. And all
I mean, we need some cryptozoology collectibles, Johnny.
A cryptozoology crypto. See, there you go.
Then it would be a cryptozoology.
Crypto.
we're getting ahead of ourselves here now. But I do think that stuff is really interesting, and I do think it all ties together. I know people think like, we're talking about a banking crisis, and now we're talking about the patron saint of facial hair and Loch Nessies.
I told you, I brought to bring my research back up.
Oh yeah, let's go.
Let me see. Her name is Saint Wilgefortis. That's probably wrong. It's Wilgefortis.
Someone will help us pronounce that. Yes. I'm not going to attempt it.
But she's also known as Incumba Liberata and Kumaris.
Okay.
So there you go. Catholic saint. So I'm not making this up, man. I got this from the Catholic saint.
Right? I mean, it's a real thing here. Yeah.
But I did look up, there's a patron saint of the internet.
Wow.
Okay.
The patron saint is Saint Isidore of Seville. He's a 6th century Spanish bishop and scholar. Because he wrote the first comprehensive encyclopedia of the ancient world. That's why he is the patron saint of the internet.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's just the modern iteration of the old encyclopedia. Remember when you used to have an encyclopedia at your house?
Oh,
and when you had an argument with someone, you just got the encyclopedia out, and if whatever was in there, that was the answer?
That was a big job of people going door to door selling the
World Book.
The World Book Britannica. There's one called the Britannica, too, right?
Yeah, and there was one that was like the World Book map. And so I remember my parents would get like the updated maps every couple of years.
And it was a big deal. They were expensive because that was like educating your family, especially your kids. And but you could buy those for like, I just saw one at like the Goodwill for like $11. It was
the whole set.
The
compendium of world book information.
I bet you somebody spent like thousands of dollars on that. $11 at the Goodwill.
That's interesting to think about. Yet another.
Look, I worked at Software City in 1994.
Wow.
And I remember CD-ROMs were like really still like to the consumer market was just really like where people were getting CD-ROMs on computers.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest seller we had was the Encyclopedia Britannica.
It makes
sense. CD-ROM. Because how easy was it to, you could go to search instead of looking through all the, contents, popped it in there. And again, you made money on every update.
Like a subscription. So they would just send you a new CD often?
Or they'd come in and buy the next, the updated version of it. And those things were not cheap, man. I'm talking they were like $68, in 1994.
Well, I mean, compared to $1,000. And you were like the most technologically proficient person in the neighborhood.
Early adopters. And then, I remember the Anarchist Cookbook that I got. And it was a big deal, man. You could like send off for it, and they send you a CD-ROM, and it was like all these things. Now you can just get on YouTube, how to build things that explode.
What you thought was subversive back then is now just readily available.
Incredibly subversive. I mean, it was like holy moly. One thing was teaching you how to make a nuclear bomb. Like how to make a nuclear bomb.
I feel like that book was always legend when I was like,
the Anarchist Cookbook.
Yeah, but I never saw. I knew it was real.
Yeah.
But you always knew somebody that had one.
Mm-hmm.
But you never saw one.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, they were preppers or whatever. Then they also had the Turner Diaries with them, too, which is like this weird white supremacy-like book, too. So it was a very interesting group of people who had the Anarchist Cookbook. But it was a real thing. And there's a great thing. The writer of it actually, there have been so many people have tried to have banned that from selling it, especially online, because anybody can get it. And it literally shows you how to, like, petrol bombs and how to make this, and I mean it's crazy. All the things it really gives you a recipe for it.
Sure,
but it has won every single court challenged by no censorship.
Free speech.
And actually the author of it, because so many people have used it for nefarious things, the author has actually said he really wished he had never put it out.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, wow, we really have gone beyond the blockchain.
We have gone way beyond
the blockchain.
But you know what? We've gone on a history lesson today. We've learned about the patron saints of internet.
That's right.
Loch Nessies, cryptozoology, the patron saint of facial hair.
Yep.
We talked about the modern banking system, UFOs, the Pentagon's response to UFOs, and I'm sure I missed a lot of there in between.
One of my favorite other patron saints is Saint Droga. He's the patron saint of the unattractive.
Ah, yes. I can relate.
I can really relate to that guy.
Yeah.
So I put in ChatGPT, who is the patron saint of cryptocurrency and why?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to further a guess of who actually there isn't one. It says there isn't one. I believe there is. Would you like to make who you think is the patron saint of cryptocurrency?
It would only be an uneducated guess. I don't think that the Catholic Church has recognized Satoshi yet.
That's got to be.
But that's who, you know.
Satoshi.
But you have to meet.
Is it Nakamura? Is that the last
one? Satoshi Nakamura. Yeah, but you have to meet certain standards. Like, you got to prove some miracles, right?
But I think it's the idea of, like, if you're throwing the idea of, like, there is.
Oh, if we're going to create one.
This figurehead. Yeah. You know, right. I'm not saying the church has to do it.
He certainly would be the canonical.
And they have canonized him by the state, I think, in the Netherlands. They did that beautiful sculpture where people come to, like, see it and worship the darn thing. But the guy is. His white paper 14 years ago, it's changed everything. It really has changed the way we look at currency.
And that's a great way to wrap it back up and circle back to the blockchain.
Yes, sir.
We've had a lot of fun tonight. I'd love getting to do this and hang out and just, you know, visit about stuff that we'd be visiting about anyway.
I'm glad you allow me to talk about the nonsense that I know. I know a lot of nonsense.
Well, comes in quite handy. Thanks for listening tonight, folks.